we have with us Corning Middle School. Will the students still please stand? Look at that. Great. Thank you. You may be seated. The students are here with a national award-winning program sponsored by the Supreme Court and the State Bar of Wisconsin. Students across the state are invited to come here and listen to an oral argument. If they accept the invitation, they are given summaries and other material about the case and may engage in some activities relating to the judicial system or the particular case. They come for an oral argument, and for each oral argument date, a justice is assigned to meet with the students after the second case. Everyone is invited to attend that meeting. We are all students, even if we're not in Corning Middle School. And the discussion will be on the procedure of taking a case, hearing a case, and then circulating opinions. It is not about the substantive issues in the particular cases that we're hearing today. Does anyone here want a summary of the case we're about to hear? If so, please raise your hand, and the marshal will give it to you. Let me introduce the court to you all. On my far left is Justice Michael Gableman. Seated next to him is Justice Patience Robinsack. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Crooks. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. And to Justice Bradley's right is Justice David Prosser. And on the far right is Justice Annette Ziegler. It is Justice Ziegler who will meet with the students after this second case this month or this day is heard. So let me call this second case, 2013 AP 1407, Wisconsin Realtors Association versus Public Service Commission, arguing on behalf of Wisconsin Realtors Association and others that, for sake of simplicity, are usually referred to as WRA, is John A. Kastner III. Arguing on behalf of the Public Service Commission is attorney Cynthia E. Smith. And the lineup will be Mr. Kastner will have 25 minutes, Ms. Smith 30 minutes, and Mr. Kastner will have rebuttal for 5. Attorney Kastner.
Madam Chief Justice, members of the court, learned counsel, good morning. My name is John Kastner. I'm with the Madison office of Von Breesen and Roper. I appear today on behalf of the plaintiff appellant petitioners, Wisconsin Realtors Association, Wisconsin Builders Association, Wisconsin Towns Association, and two individual parties, John Morehouse Sr. and Irvin Selk. I hope to make 3 points today. I'll tell you what they're going to be. First of all, Wisconsin Statute 227.115 is a rulemaking statute. That statute exists to assure that the legislature and the public know before the legislature acts on a proposed rule what price housing in the state of Wisconsin and the people that live in that housing will pay if a proposed rule becomes law. Second of all, I intend to establish that the Public Service Commission usurps legislative power when it says that they didn't need to prepare a housing impact report because the agency has adequately protected housing through the setbacks that it's established. And it further usurps legislative power when it says that even if unregulated wind energy systems might have a measurable impact on housing, properly regulated wind energy systems do not have such an impact. And finally, I intend to tell the court why WRA and my clients, who I will from now on refer to simply as WRA, as I have in my brief, why they believe that the rules adopted by the Public Service Commission do affect the development and construction and cost and availability of housing in the state of Wisconsin.
I wanted to ask you, who makes up this report on rules affecting housing? You said the PSC, but I don't know if that's right.
Judge, Justice Abrahamson, I apologize. Statute provided when this lawsuit was filed that a housing impact report was supposed to accompany a rule when it was sent to the legislature for review. Those reports, at the time this case arose, were prepared by the Department of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Since this case arose, the statute has been amended and today requires that those reports be prepared by the Department of Administration.
Right. Did the Department of Commerce or Administration prepare a rule?
No, they were not asked to, and they did not prepare one.
Where does the legislation say that the department has to be asked?
It doesn't.
How does the department know that there's a rule being proposed?
The Court of Appeals concluded, and we agree, that it was the responsibility of the promulgating agency, in this case that was the Public Service Commission, to include that report with the bill, the proposed rule, when it sent it to the legislature. And the Court of Appeals concluded that necessarily that report had to be requested by the Public Service Commission.
Mr. Kasner, I've got a question relating to the overall procedure here. It's my understanding that this rule did go to the legislature, that there were at least some minor modifications suggested by the legislature. Those modifications were made, and then the rule ultimately is adopted. Is it significant that the legislature had a chance to wade in on this and suggest modifications which were adopted and yet did not require specifically the report that you're talking about?
No, it's not significant, Justice.
Why not, sir?
It's not significant because the statute does not contemplate or provide that the legislature is expected to request the preparation of a report. There is no language within the statute authorizing or compelling the preparation of a report, that that report would be requested by the legislature. And I would add that it does not provide that it can be requested by members of the public.
It strikes me, if I were on the totally outside looking in, that where the legislature has a chance to suggest modifications and does do so, and yet doesn't say you must give us this report, that is significant. It certainly appears to be significant that the legislature had a chance and didn't make such a request.
I don't agree with your conclusion, Justice Crooks. The statute contemplates that the agency will include that report when it sends the bill to the legislature. At that point, the legislature, if a proposed rule affects housing, and if a report is prepared, the legislature, when it gets the rule, will be able to review the report prepared by Commerce. And it will be able to determine for itself the price that people in this state and the housing that they live in will pay if the rule becomes law. If they don't get that report, they won't understand that price. They won't know why they would want to request the report.
Counsel, do we have to decide all three of your points in your favor in order for you to win today?
Yes. I believe you do.
Counsel, what if there is someone in the legislature that says, oh, this wind energy stuff is controversial, and the statute provides, as you indicate, 227.115, that if a proposed rule directly or substantially affects the availability of housing in this state, the department shall prepare a report on the proposed rule before it is submitted to the legislative council staff under 227.15. What if someone on the staff says, whoa, this is a controversial area? Do they have the authority to request a report from the department, or does anyone in the legislature have authority to request such a report, even if a report is not accompanied?
The statute does not provide that they can request. As you read from the statute, Justice Bradley, Walsh Bradley, the statute provides that the report is supposed to be requested before the rule is sent to the legislature.
I know. I just don't have the Department of Commerce, then Commerce, regulations with regard to this, or some other regulations that may inform my question. It sounds to me like you're saying if someone may inform the answer to my question. It sounds like you're saying that if someone on the legislative council staff says, oh, I'm sure where they're going to want a report, they have to be mum and not express their concern because they have no authority to request the report? Is that right?
The statute doesn't answer that question, Justice.
No. Do you have an answer to the question?
Pardon?
Do you have an answer to the question outside of it's not in the words of the statute? Because I know it's not in the words of the statute. And I don't have available to me right now, for instance, the Department of Commerce regulations that existed at the time vis-a-vis that sort of thing.
I would have to say that the statute does not answer the question. So if a staff member at the legislature were to request that such a report be prepared, it's unclear who they would direct that request to. Would they direct it to the promulgating agency? Would they direct it to Commerce if it was at the time this rule became law? It's unclear who they would do that to. And I can't tell the court how something outside of the statute would be or could be or should be handled. I'm not prepared to argue how that would be handled.
Could I ask sort of the same question, but with a little different hypothetical? This court develops rules. It issues rules. I think it's a little unlikely that our rules would affect housing in Wisconsin or the other things in 227.115. Suppose, arguably, one of our rules did affect that. Do we have a duty to contact, right now, the Department of Administration? Because as I read the statute, the duty to issue a report is a duty formerly on the Department of Commerce and presently on the Department of Administration.
The Court of Appeals concluded that the promulgating agency has a duty to request the preparation of a report by Commerce when this case came up.
So you're saying the Supreme Court of Wisconsin, if it issued a rule, ought to be thinking every time, does this rule affect housing in Wisconsin, and make a decision to contact the Department of Administration. Is that right?
That would be my reading of the statute, Justice Prosser.
Counselor, I don't know if you've looked at this or not, and I didn't see it in anybody's brief, but this is a new statute and a type of report that I was not familiar with before. But I'm certainly familiar with a lot of cases that deal with environmental impact statements, another kind of report that the DNR often requests, sometimes the PSC requests, depending on what's going on. And when I went back and looked at the statutes that deal with that, Section 1.11 sub 2 has language that is similar in that it says that an EIS is required, quote, for major actions significantly affecting the quality of the human environment, end quote. So they're not required all the time. They're required for major actions that significantly affect. And, of course, we have a statute here that talks about whether the rule that the PSC is promulgating here directly or significantly affects housing, right? So it's somewhat of a, you don't need it every time, but you need it if you meet the criteria in the statute. Am I making any sense to you?
I understand your question, Justice Rogasak.
And is it comparable, then, to when we say, yes, you have to have an EIS? Should we use those cases as somewhat of a help to us here, that they had to have a report on housing or not?
I don't know that you could rely on 227.111 to make that decision. The statute provides that Department of Commerce, today administration, could adopt rules, but it hasn't. So there's no guidance to promulgating agencies as to how they're supposed to do that.
Okay.
But they have to make a decision. They assemble a rule. They hold hearings. They do all of the work they're supposed to do to assemble a rule. At some point, they put it in an envelope. They lick it. And they send it to the legislature. Our contention is, before they lick that envelope, they have to ask themselves, do we have to comply with 227.115 before we lick this envelope?
Okay. All right.
And the question then becomes, how do they make that decision? Now, my conclusion, which I love making at the beginning of my argument, is...
You can make it a couple times, then.
I'll get to make it twice if there's enough time. The conclusion is... The question is, how do I know whether or not a rule affects housing? The statute says substantially or
directly
or substantially affects the development, construction, cost, or availability of housing. If I said that every time I wanted to talk about it, you'd get bored. I'm going to say affects housing. You need to assume when I say that, that I'm not trying to pull the wool over your eyes. I mean all of that, but we won't have enough time.
Okay, well, I'm with you. Go ahead.
All right. So you have to ask yourself, how do I determine whether a rule affects housing?
When you say I, you mean the PSC.
I, the PSC, gotcha. I, the Supreme Court, when it's promulgating a rule.
Okay.
You have to ask yourself, we always assume that I, as an agency, have drafted the rule properly, but if I hadn't, could the standards that I'm establishing in the rule that I'm creating affect the development or the affect housing?
Yeah.
If they could, then the legislature needs the second opinion. It needs to know before it decides to approve the rule. If this is a rule that's going to affect housing, we need to know, what price will housing pay if we say yes? And that's important, because when the legislature gets the rule, if it affects housing, if commerce tells them, all commerce does is it analyzes the rule and determines how that rule will affect housing. It doesn't decide that it's a good rule. It doesn't decide that it's a bad rule. It doesn't offer an opinion on that. It simply says, if this becomes law, what will happen to housing?
Well, it looks at the factors under subsection 3, right? And they all have to be taken care of in the report. Correct.
Right. It's going to go out and do all of that. It'll assemble a report, and it will tell the legislature, If this becomes law, this will happen.
Okay.
Armed with that knowledge, the legislature has several choices. It can say, this rule is so important, and what we're trying to accomplish is so important that even though this rule will have this particular impact on housing, it's so important that we do what the rule does, that we're willing to allow housing to pay that price.
Okay.
But they might decide they're not. But they can't decide whether or not housing and the people that live in it should pay that price if they don't even know what the price is.
Okay.
That's why the preparation of these reports is important. And there's a backside to that. And several of the court have asked whether or not the legislature could request that report. My concern is that there may be members of the legislature that don't want that report.
Or they may not know about what the report might provide. They may not have done that research.
Here's what I'm concerned about. Here's what my clients are concerned about. If the rule is going to affect housing, and I still want the rule to go through, if I don't know what that impact is, and it hurts housing, when my constituents as an elected official come to me and say, how did you let that become law? I didn't know. I didn't know it was going to do this to housing. But if that report is prepared and given to them, they can't say, I didn't know it was going to do this. That's what the report does. It makes them aware of the consequences of approving the rule.
So they can make an informed policy choice about whether to accept it or not. Is that correct?
Correct. And it also lets the public know before the rule becomes law how the rule is going to affect them. It's an independently prepared report. It's prepared by an agency that isn't interested in this case in whether we have wind turbines or not. Commerce was the agency responsible for preparing the state's housing inventory. Its job was to oversee the housing that the people in this state live in.
Council, I want you to assure me that we aren't invading the province of the legislature if we rule your way in this case.
I can assure you that you're not.
More than that.
What a surprise.
I think
that's what Justice Crooks was getting at when he asked his question earlier today, and that's of significant concern. Are you saying the legislature is without the power to act without this report?
This statute has existed for 20 years. To my knowledge, there's never been a case where Commerce or the Department of Administration has been asked to prepare a report. To my knowledge, they have never prepared a report. But this law is important, and compliance with this law is important.
Hasn't
and
the
reason
law
I can tell
changed,
you that it,
Council?
If I could finish answering
Certainly,
Justice
absolutely.
Hebrew's question, the reason I can tell you this does not invade the province of the legislature is that the way this has been handled, the Public Service Commission never considered the statute. At least the record does not reflect that it did. If it had, it would have to have asked itself during the process of putting the rule together, does this rule affect housing?
And anyone
the record would have that information, but we have nothing. What they did instead is after the fact, when we challenged this, they said, well, we think that we adequately protected housing by establishing the standards that we did. But if you adequately protect housing from the impact of the rule, you're telling the legislature, we've decided on our own that you don't need the report that would tell you what the consequences of this rule to housing would be. So we're taking away from you that power to decide when it gets to you.
Sometimes when we get a rule that's proposed to us, if we don't have enough information, we send it back and we say, look, we need more information or we're going to deny it now, but you can resubmit it later. Did the legislature say we need more information or did anyone say to the legislature, don't take this up because you don't have the report. Send it back and make them do the report.
The statute does not say that they can. It does not contemplate that they can. But I can honestly say it doesn't say that they can't. But if you've got a legislative committee that's going to review the rule, and it doesn't want that report, it wants to adopt the rule, but it doesn't want people to know what it does, they're not going to ask.
Counsel, this statute has been revised extensively since your case, since the rule here, right?
Yes.
And even before the revision, your report, that is the housing report, was not the only report that the statute required. Isn't that right? DOA under the statute was also required to make reports about economic impact report, right?
Yes.
Is there an economic impact here on businesses?
I don't know the answer to that question, Justice Abramson.
If it was, then it would have come under the DOA under that provision.
That statute would not affect whether or not this report needed to be prepared.
No, I understand that, but what I'm trying to say is that there are other reports, too. So what we say about your report might affect other statutes that have reports. In addition to that, as I understand the new statute, that it was adopted in 2011 Act 21, and the issue that we're discussing today arose before 2011, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Okay. But under the new rule, proposed rule in final draft form has to be submitted to the governor for approval. Under the new statute. And then if the governor doesn't approve it, it isn't submitted to the legislature, right?
Yes.
And the executive branch has an order that says, in 2011, that says that orders that all of the agencies submit rules to the DOA. Was there anything similar before 2011 where the governor, where there is instructions to all the agencies to submit all their proposals to DOA? As I understand it, that's the new proceeding.
There has always been a requirement.
Yes.
That an agency notify DOA that it's about to undertake rulemaking.
That's what I thought.
And that requirement exists before they've held any hearings or done anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't possibly know at that point in time whether or not the rule that they were about to consider.
But the DOA was on alert that there were rules being considered by the PSC relating.
The agency intended to consider
promulgating
a rule.
Okay. But there's public notice of the proposed rules and public hearing, right?
I didn't hear you.
Your public notice of all the hearings of the PSC, right?
Yes, sir.
And it's put in the register, whatever it's called here, right?
I believe they are, yes.
So the DOA has, like everybody else in the state, notice.
Only that the agency is considering the promulgation of a rule. They don't know the contents of it or whether it would affect housing.
They never know the contents publicly. They've never been a publication of these rules publicly. Never put in the register so that anyone who read the register knows it's up for consideration.
They know that the agency is considering promulgating a rule. In this case, the agency was directed to promulgate this rule by Statute 196.378. They were directed to do this. So everybody knew the rulemaking was coming.
Okay. So DOA knew.
Yes.
Thank you. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. I don't know that you got to the main argument yet, but...
I see that my time is up.
I see that, too. Thank you, counsel. Smith, you're an attorney attached to the Public Service Commission?
Yes, Chief Justice. Thank you very much. My name is Cynthia Smith, and I'm the Chief Legal Counsel at the Public Service Commission, and I'm joined today with Assistant General Counsel Justin Chasko. I want to touch on, I think the court is right on in its concerns about usurping the legislative authority, and I want to touch on the specific questions as it relates to the process here.
Who's usurping the legislative
authority? That the appellants are saying that the commission is usurping the authority here. And I respectfully submit that if you were to reverse the Court of Appeals, the court would be dangerously close to usurping the authority of the legislature, who has specifically said if rules make it through the legislative review process pursuant to Chapter 227.20 sub 3, that this court is to presume that they were duly promulgated and that every single step along the rulemaking process has been followed.
Counselor, but doesn't that depend upon when you apply that statute? You apply that statute when it's submitted for consideration, right, by the legislature. You submit it to the Legislative Reference Bureau. Then the statute clicks in. But I think what opposing counsel is talking about is what happened before you got to the place where you get a presumption. So I'm not sure that I see quite how that hits up against his argument, which is not that you didn't do everything forward, but it's in the process that you used initially before you would get to the presumption.
Yeah, I believe the presumption attaches once the rule is actually promulgated and approved, and then formally a certified copy of that rule is submitted to the Legislative Reference Bureau for publication.
What does the presumption apply to? Does it apply to the notice to the public that's required? Does it apply to the hearing that's required? Does it apply to the report that was required?
I think the presumption, Chief Justice, applies that the entire process from start to finish has been done in accordance with the rules and to the satisfaction of the legislature. The legislature has put for itself numerous checks and balances into that process. And let me just briefly walk you through them. And in specific response to your question, Justice Bradley, they do have the authority to ask the report. It's not in 227.115. Instead, that authority is found in 227.19 sub 1 sub B and 227.19 sub 4 sub D. And I'll touch on that a bit more specifically. But let me just take you through the process these rules went through, which was a long process. It took 3 years, hundreds of hours of work of the Wind Siting Council that was a statutorily appointed council, thousands of documents reviewed by the council and the commission, public hearings, both the administrative and the legislative, and then a very extensive legislative review process.
As you do that, can you also address how you believe that this rule did not directly or substantially affect housing?
I certainly will. Let me start with the process, and then I'll get to the substantive question of when we get to the 227.115. The legislature has checks and balances, and the first step when a report or when a proposed rule is sent downtown, the first set of eyes, in addition to the commission looking at it, is the legislative council staff's review pursuant to 227.15. And the statutes, I think it's sub 2B, provides that LEG Council staff is to act as the clearinghouse for all rules and, quote, ensure that the promulgation procedures required by this chapter are followed. If LEG Council has any issues with the rules or they see something, they make a recommendation to the agency that the agency must respond to. Certainly, LEG Council at that step, while not statutorily required, those are very skilled and knowledgeable people. And Attorney Kasner has said to this court, though not in his arguments today, but in his briefs, that it was just so clear from the face of these rules that they had an impact of housing. A report is required. Well, surely that learned staff there would have at least raised the question, and they didn't. The next step in the check process is the legislative review.
Who would have raised the question?
LEG Council.
LEG Council.
Correct. Again, statutorily, they're not required, but they are required to sort of act as the clearinghouse. And these people do all kinds of rules.
But even before it gets there, you must have undertaken that analysis. And I got to tell you, it's a stretch for me to say that wind turbines don't affect housing. So you got to really walk me
sure,
over
let me,
that because it's
back.
Significant. I mean, having those, I drive by a number of them on my way here almost every time. It's significant, the impact they have on the housing. How do you get beyond that?
I respect your opinion, and a lot of people may have strong beliefs. What the commission, when it makes a determination, it actually has to look at the data and how are those beliefs or perceptions translating to the data. And what the commission did, and the Wind Siting Council, who had an array of expertise on it, it had realtors, landowners, farmers, various interest groups, all made up this council. And what the Wind Council was tasked to do was look. And this was before the rule was submitted. So all of these things were accused of doing things after the fact. But we looked at the impact of the housing before we put pen to paper and before the rules were sent to the legislature.
Well,
and
if you're looking at the impact, you found there's zero impact. Do you think it has to be negative impact? Do you think it's positive impact?
I think for purposes of the application of 227.115, the impact has to be direct or substantial, not indirect, de minimis, tangential. The legislative history of Chapter 227.115, the legislature contemplated, do we want a lower, is it any impact, is it an indirect impact? And they specifically crossed out the word indirect and left it with the words direct and substantial.
Well, Counselor, didn't the rule itself be put together to lessen the impact of wind farms on housing?
Actually, no. If you look at...
Well, why do you have any setback then, or why do you have a limit on the decibel level and when it can be louder and when it cannot be louder? Why do you have a limit on all those things if it doesn't affect housing?
And again, it's not whether it has an effect, a perceived effect, a direct and substantial one. Why we have setbacks is the primary concern is not from human health risk associated with the wind turbine. It's that they may fall over. Again, it happens rarely, but it is a safety concern to that. Why we have noise standards and setbacks, again, there may be those who find that annoying. And so, again, but it's not those de minimis conditions. When you look and when the Wind Council looked at the actual sales data, how do those beliefs translate? They had a study that was done by Berkeley National Labs, commissioned by the Department of Energy, that looked over 75,000 sales over a 10-year period.
Did the commission do any digging in Wisconsin as to how many lawsuits might have been filed dealing with wind farms?
Not to my knowledge. Again, we are knowledgeable in terms of the regulation. I'm
just curious.
Yeah.
You know, on CCAP, just type in, you know, whether there are any, because maybe there are landowners that think that impacts their...
Yeah, again, the work of the Wind Siting Council, the bulk of it predated me,
okay.
So I can't speak exactly, but I do know that our staff is a very diligent staff and will leave no stone unturned to try to get information that they feel will be helpful to the commission.
Council, don't you think that by limiting the level of decibels and when it can be at one level and when at another, that has a direct effect on housing? That's why you limited it?
No, actually, I disagree with that. Again, if you look at the studies,
there's no impact on housing, then what's your justification for limiting it? Why not just this is a commercial venture, and these folks are going to, they're trying to make money. You've got folks that are living in a residential neighborhood nearby, so somehow you got to figure out how these folks can be reasonably happy with one another.
And why we did that is because the legislature told us to write these minimum standards. And the reason the legislature told us to do that was because political subdivisions were creating unreasonable limitations on that, preventing these wind turbines from coming into the communities.
Well, they didn't want piecemeal regulations.
And they didn't want a moratorium. So they directed the commission to set some thresholds that the locals could not be more restrictive.
Right.
But unregulated windfield, if a local community chooses to have no regulations, they can do that. So again, if there was this presumption and that they caused this impact, whether it be to housing or health, one would think the legislature would have said, we need the statewide standards that apply everywhere. And that's not the case. Wisconsin Chapter 66.0401 gives the locals the ability to simply not have regulations. They only have to regulate if they're going to be restrict the wind energy development.
Council, when the hearings were held by the Public Service Commission, by the Energy Council, did everybody agree or was there conflict in terms of what was being presented concerning the effect on housing?
The majority of the Wind Siting Council did agree, and that's quoted in our initial brief, that there was not a discernible impact on housing. There was a minority view, but the majority of the Wind Siting Council, that position then was also adopted by the commission, found that there was not a direct or substantial impact to housing.
And this was based on testimony that was presented?
It was based on a whole host of things. It was based upon some very technical data, like I started to talk about the Berkeley Lab study. It was based upon testimony from landowners. We had the testimony of a local town administrator that has had, I think it's the Red River Township, that has had wind energy systems for a decade plus. And he testified there's been no drop in market value here, and homes continue to be built. So it was a mix of both very technical, scientific, peer-reviewed, as well as opinion testimony.
Counselor, what was the reason for the PSC not just asking for a report to be sure that they had the fullest amount of information possible? Because the legislature decided that if there was, by your rule, any direct or substantial effect, then there should be a report. And why? I mean, I hear you arguing, oh, there's no direct or substantial effect, not that there's no effect. Okay? Well, I mean, that's such a subjective view. I mean, what you may think is not direct or substantial, the guy that lives in a house next door may think is direct or substantial. So without having to get into concerns, why not just wear a belt and suspenders and get the report that the legislature defined in subsection 3.
Again, the statute says direct or substantial, and it's not what I think or anybody thinks. It's the totality of the actual data, and
well,
that's what relied on.
PSC has got to make a determination that their rule was not direct
and substantial,
right?
Correct. That determination was made. And with all due respect to the Department of Commerce, frankly, I think that there are probably fewer agencies that can undertake and understand the impacts of wind turbines or lack of impacts than the Public Service Commission. You see in 227.115, it says, Commerce, you can go and ask other agencies for help. And I surmise that it would have been somewhat of a circular where Commerce would have said, well, tell us what you know about wind turbines and how they impact.
And I agree with you. It does sound rather circular, just that the agencies are asking other agencies, and if the agencies agree, then it's fine. You mentioned, I want to go back about 10 minutes ago, I think in response to one of Justice Rogensack's questions, you mentioned that one of the purposes of the overarching alternative wind energy legislation is to avoid piecemeal regulation by local municipalities. It's also true, isn't it, that one of the main reasons, and it's stated in the general purposes, is to encourage and promote the placement of these systems everywhere in our state?
Again, I think there's certainly the energy priority law, and again, today's
answer
case,
to my question is yes.
Yes,
right?
Yes, there are certain statutory
provisions.
So that
provisions. Goes to my next question. We agree, it seems you agree, and the bench is taking it as a given, seem by based on all the questions and answers I've been listening to, that the economic impact is a direct impact. The economic impact on housing, whether housing values go down or whether they go up, that is a direct impact. True?
If there is that impact, but the reports, the data we have
I've
seen,
heard
Justice
you
Gableman.
Talk about the reports, mm-hmm. and I'm just asking you a simple question. It calls for a yes or no response. I don't know why you're going back to it. The economic impact on housing is a direct impact, yes?
If there is an economic impact, yes. But my answer is the data does not show, respectfully, that there is an economic impact.
I will.
Counsel, can
now,
I just...
Now, what this reminds me of...
trying to get to a question.
Okay. What this right. reminds me of, this legislation, is when one might go to a clothing store and find an article of clothing, one size fits all. Some of them have politely changed it to one size fits most. Now, I, given my current state, I fall outside the parameters of most one size fits all. And so I'm reminded in recollecting that, and it's not because I'm too thin. I know some of the bench thinks that.
Right.
But it reminds me very much of the late Senator Ted Kennedy. Sometime before his death, it was proposed that these wind energy turbines be placed off the coast within the horizon, within the view of the Kennedy compound in Hyannisport. And they exercised, as I recall, it reported in the media, some considerable effort to prevent the placement of those turbines. Because when they looked out their sea view, they certainly didn't want to see wind turbines. I don't remember if they were, my recollection is they were successful in stopping it, but I don't remember for sure. So my question is, why isn't this a fact-specific finding? How can the agency impose a one-size-fits-all when it seems to me it's going to depend on the needs and the values of each locality, and what happens if the agencies that are all talking to each other and they're all agreeing with one another because the so-called experts from wherever have told them this? What happens if you're wrong?
Let me start with, whatever you may think of wind turbines or renewable energy policy, that's not what this case is about. This case is about whether the rules as have been drafted and were accepted by the legislature have a direct or substantial impact to housing. And, you know, I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all. The commission was tasked with setting some restrictions that we looked at the data and the scientific data that is cited in our briefs and came to the conclusion there was not a direct or substantial impact. At the end of the day, however, whatever the agencies may think, and if we're colluding or doing something nefarious, at the end of the day...
I hope you did not take it from my question, my implication of that, of wrongdoing. I started with the observation it sounded rather circular, and my recollection is you agreed with
me. I do agree it's circular,
right.
But the ultimate say about these rules comes back to the legislature, and that's where I want to return to your concern, Justice Ziegler, about are we usurping it, and the numerous checks and balances through the process. We talked about Ledge Council. You asked whether or not the legislative committee, it did send it back, the rules back to the commission to look at, and we made those changes, and then they went through and they were promulgated. Nowhere during the legislative review process, there were plenty of public comments, over 2,000, including comments of individuals who may have had this belief. And nowhere did anyone in the legislative committee ask for this report. And you asked, Justice Bradley, about where in the statute, what specifically 227.194D gives number 3, says the legislature can reject rules if it's inconsistent with its legislative intent. And that was the basis that the committee sent it back the first time. Again, didn't say do a report. And, in fact, they actually submitted comments from the realtors. And the realtors never asked for a report. I think you have to question if they really felt this strongly that this independent view would have been helpful, why they didn't ask for a report at that time.
See, you just said we're here to determine whether the rules have a direct and substantial impact on housing. I thought your argument was that ship has sailed. This has been properly legislatively enacted. We're due a presumption, so you don't really need to go back to see whether it has a direct or substantial impact on housing because it's done, it's over, they're enacted, we get the presumption, it's not overcome.
I agree with that. I am anticipating the argument that counsel has made. They said they have rebutted that presumption. And that's why I'm sort of revisiting that. But I completely agree. The legislature has signed off on these rules, and that should statutorily be given tremendous deference.
Do you know why there was this concern? You said the word moratorium, that you thought there would be a moratorium on wind turbines. Why was there that concern?
Again, I don't know that I used the word moratorium. I think I was saying that if the legislature had concerns that there were these health effects, that they would not allow wind turbines or would not allow unregulated wind turbines to be developed.
I think that what you were saying when you did use the word moratorium was that the legislature was concerned that towns, villages, cities would impose a moratorium on all of these structures.
Thank you, Chief Justice. It's coming back to me, exactly.
And that what the legislature did not want was a moratorium, nor did they want different rules in each of these communities. And so this is a state-imposed rule on everyone. And the statute does not say if any individual or entity is directly or substantially affected, you need the DOA report. It says generally.
Correct.
If there's an effect. Now, what about, you cited 227.19.1b4. That says that the legislature... Delegation of rulemaking is intended to eliminate the necessity of establishing every administrative aspect by the legislature. In doing so, however, the legislature reserves to itself, and number four says, the right to delay or suspend the implementation of any rule or proposed rule while under review. The legislature had this rule under review. It did not suspend or delay.
It did suspend it. Right.
Suspended or delayed it on particular matters, not this one.
It was actually JCRER, the Joint Committee for Administrative Rules Review, that suspended the rules. And they, if you looked, what the basis of which they suspended it were concerns of, I think it was the sub D, arbitrary and capricious, and I think, and health concerns. And the legislature then had the opportunity. That was a temporary suspension. They had a year in which to consider that, being, you know, that issue squarely raised before them, whether or not they then wanted to pass legislation to change the rules permanently, terminate the rules, and they chose not to. They allowed those rules to go into effect without any further modification. And, again, I think that
that there wasn't a gripe about the lack of a report from the DOA. That's my point.
No, it was not.
They had the right to, and response, they had the right to delay or suspend the implementation on the grounds of the failure for the DOA to have a report.
Right.
That was not part of this.
No, it was not. It was just those two general criteria. Again, nowhere throughout this three-year process did anybody say anything until this lawsuit that the commission had failed to do the required report. And respectfully, I'm suspect of that because you had numerous eyes on it from Ledge Council. You had the legislative staff who are presumed to know the rules that they impose and know that this statute is out there. And if they want it, and frankly, if the legislature wants any information from an agency, we do our best to respond as fully and quickly as possible. And I've said that the criteria clearly gave them pretty broad, and as Chief Justice, if you read them, they have pretty broad authority over these rulemaking processes.
Can you tell me what you've alluded several times now that WRA waited, the opposing side waited. What inference? Please spell it out. What inference do you ask us to draw from that?
I believe that that this is a collateral attack on the substance of the rules, that they weren't able to get changed during the rulemaking process. They were actively engaged. They submitted testimony. They submitted, and the Towns Association, another appellant, submitted specific suggestions. They didn't say we need a report. They felt they had information. They made suggestions. And my point is, I think that is exactly why you have the statutory presumption under 227.20 that it is deemed to be duly promulgated with all the procedures followed. Because to allow otherwise, you get these collateral attacks that upend here what was a three-year process that the legislature looked at and had every opportunity to modify and change.
When, in your view, would it have been the appropriate time for them to request the report?
Frankly, at any time throughout that three-year promulgation process, and even during the 1 year of the suspension. I mean, it was only after all other efforts, whether it be administrative or legislatively, failed that they now are trying to get this court to step in and say, never mind the presumption, and you should invalidate these rules that have been duly promulgated by the legislature.
Ms. Smith, Justice Prosser has a question.
Thank you very much, Chief. 196.378.4G. Mm-hmm. Who wanted that to be enacted into law? What's the source of that statute?
Again, I apologize. I can't speak directly. I think there was probably a multitude of folks. I would assume that those supportive of renewable energy may have wanted that provision for the reasons that the Chief Justice had talked about.
Okay. But what was it, the PSC?
No, I don't believe
so. Not the PSC. The Wind Siting Council. Where did that come from? It's part of the legislature.
That was the same legislation that directed the creation of the Wind Siting Council.
So whoever wanted the legislation wanted the PSC to appoint all the members of the Wind Siting Council?
Well, keep in mind, remember that the statute actually prescribes the backgrounds. So the legislature actually said these are the types of skill sets we want, not the individual names associated, but a number of different. So we had a very broad-based collaborative group that had all different kinds of views. And if you review the Wind Siting Council report and the minority report, I think you saw that diversity.
But the members of the Wind Siting Council were all appointed by the Public Service Commission.
That's
right?
Correct.
And I thought I heard you say that the PSC made the determination that no report under 227.115. How did that? Was there a meeting of the commissioners or what?
I think it was in their affirmative act of sending those rules down to the legislature without the accompanying report. They did not have a specific finding of the inapplicability. None is required. And even if the commission maybe didn't know about that statute, again, they're still obligated to comply with it, and we did the work necessary to do the analysis and determine whether there is a report.
So there was no conscious discussion of should we get this report under 227.115 or not?
There certainly was a conscious discussion about whether or not the proposed rules met what the legislature was looking for. And as part of that, there certainly was numerous conversations about whether or to what extent the proposed rules would have a direct or substantial impact to housing. But did they use those exact same words? No, Justice Prosser, I don't believe they did. But legally, they're not required to do so. I draw you to when the legislature wants sort of a negative affirmation from the agencies, it asks for that. There is, Chief Justice, you were talking about some of the other reports that are required. One of the reports, in addition to sort of an economic analysis, is whether or not there's an impact on small businesses. And that's set forth in 227.114. And in that provision, it specifically says when you send your rule package done, if the business council has determined that the rules will not have a significant impact on small business, you need to tell us why. And that's specifically in 227. So when the legislature wants an agency to make that negative affirmation, this rule doesn't apply, they ask for that in the rules, and that wasn't there for 227.15.
Okay, now the Wind Siting Council prepared a recommendation or reports for the PSC.
Yes.
Did that report go to the legislature?
I didn't go down with the rule package, but it was certainly, actually, I think it did go down. I think as part of the statute under that created it, they sent a copy to the legislature. I believe that. I can certainly double check that, but I do believe it did. And all of our reports are publicly available. We have an electronic regulatory filing system. But I do believe that the report specifically went to the legislature.
Thank you.
If the PSC had a housing report prepared, they could still have enacted exactly the same rule that they did, correct?
I see my time is up. May I respond?
Oh, sure, of course.
Again, ultimately, it's up to the legislature whether the rule is enacted or not. But, yes, I mean,
but as far as the PSC is concerned, they could have had the report, and they could have sent exactly the same rule forward.
That's correct.
Okay. Is this any way comparable to cases where we look at when an ESI wasn't prepared by the PSC and either the DNR or someone else who should have requested it, and then there's an outcry over that? Sometimes we say, oh, yeah, it was reasonable not to request an ESI here. Other times we say, no, we're going to send it back and have the agency do the ESI. Mm-hmm. Is it comparable?
Again, I hadn't thought of that until you mentioned that, and that's a really interesting analogy. Again, I think each of those reports have their own statutory language that triggers it, so I don't know. The language is so unique in the 227.115 about direct or substantial that I'm not sure I can square. I think the
Section 1.11 is where the ESI mm-hmm. comes, and it just says substantially.
Yeah. So
the only similarity I saw.
Yeah, it's interesting, but I don't know, given the uniqueness of the language, that
but
it's...
But you don't make the report.
Okay, thank you.
The DOA makes the report.
In terms of the housing impact report?
Yes.
If the report were to have been required, then it would have been Commerce. But pursuant to 115, they... I surmise would have asked for contributions or from information from the commission or other agencies.
Your job is not to make the report. Your job, it seems to me, from the statutes, which have holes in them, and some of them have been repaired in the 2011 from my perspective, your job is to make an initial determination whether there's a substantial or direct impact. If there is, then there's a little hole here as to who asked the DOA to make a report.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Doesn't say.
It doesn't.
And it just doesn't, including the administrative rules procedural manual put out by the Wisconsin Legislative Council, which is the new version. It doesn't say who.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then that's correct. I think that means that it could be the agency, or maybe if the court were doing the rules and they didn't think it did, I think it doesn't preclude anybody else from asking the report. What is interesting is that, as you noted, DOA gets notification. Commerce gets notification of these rules, again, for a different purpose. But there is this information sharing amongst the agencies. And Commerce was notified of these rules, and again, they did not raise an eyebrow or say, hey, wait a minute, maybe our housing folks should look at this. I see that I'm out of time.
They have the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Kastner.
Mr. Kastner, one question that probably will not be surprising to you is Ms. Smith, in response to one of my questions, indicated that at any time during a four-year period, your clients could have come forward to request this study. And the fact that you didn't indicates, we are told, that this is now an effort to do an end run around the legislative process and get this court to accomplish what your clients couldn't accomplish in the legislature. Tell us, in your view, why that is incorrect.
I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not going to tell you that I know something I don't know. I can tell you that the Realtors and the Builders Association lobbied hard to get 227.115 passed. It was their conclusion that if there was ever a rule that affected housing, for which such a report should have been prepared. It was this one. But it wasn't prepared. They couldn't ask for the report under the statute. It doesn't say that they can ask for a report. It says that the agency promulgating the rule has to include the report if the rule affects housing. So it was the agency's responsibility if it concluded that the rule affects housing to make sure there was a report, because it had to check that box when it put everything in the envelope before it licked it shut. But it didn't. Now, once the rule goes to the legislature, the statute has, if it required a report and there wasn't one, the statute's been violated.
Could I ask you, Mr. Kastner, what is the primary motivation of the realtors and the builders and the towns? Is it trying to firm up 227.115 and make sure that it is really complied with consistently, or is it to invalidate PSC 121?
I would have to say it's the former, Justice Prosser. The builders and the realtors value the existence of this statute. And what we've got is an agency that, from all appearances, ignored it as it promulgated and obtained approval of this rule. And when we filed the lawsuit, we said that a review of the legislative of the rulemaking record fails to disclose that they ever considered the statute as they promulgated the rule. Now, we're being told that, well, yes, they did, but the argument, they have never said we considered whether it directly or substantially affects the development, construction, cost, or availability of housing. What they have said is, well, we looked at whether it would have an impact on property values. But that's as far as they went. That doesn't affect whether or not a builder who's trying to sell a house 1,251 feet from a wind turbine is going to be able to build the same house that he contemplated anywhere else in town? Or is he going to have to take the windows off the side that faces the windmill so that he doesn't get the shadow flicker when the sun is right? Is he going to have to add more sound insulation? Is that going to affect the way he builds the house or the cost that he incurs in building it? Of course it is. But it doesn't look like the PSC ever thought about that, because they didn't say they did.
Counsel, your complaint, however, in its prayer for relief, the first thing it asks for is declaring PSC 128 is void and unenforceable. The second thing, and the only other thing, number two, that a notice be sent to the Ledge Reference Bureau advising it of the validity or invalidity of PSC 128, with directions that the Ledge Reference Bureau shall publish a notice of that determination in the Wisconsin Administrative Register and insert an annotation. Has your approach changed since the filing of the complaint in terms of what your emphasis is? That's the only relief sought in your complaint.
No, it hasn't, Justice Walsh Bradley. I can explain that second action. It's going to be sort of a departure from this litigation, but I'll explain why we included it in the complaint. The builders and the realtors and 11 other trade associations filed a declaratory judgment action in Dane County challenging the validity of amendments to Trans 233 that had been adopted by the Department of Transportation. The court ruled at the trial court level that the rules were invalid because the agency had failed to comply with 227.115. And because it was a declaratory judgment action and it was binding on the agency, it was our assumption that the Department of Transportation thenceforth would no longer attempt to enforce the revisions they had made to Trans 233. But they did. And when we went to the Legislative Reference Bureau to find out why they hadn't amended the rule in the administrative rules, we were told, well, the agency has to ask for that. and the agency hadn't asked to have the administrative rule show that they had lost the lawsuit and that their amendments were invalid. So finally, they went to the legislature. The legislature amended the law to specifically provide that if a declaratory judgment finds that an administrative rule is invalid, the court or the parties will notify the Legislative Reference Bureau, and somebody other than the agency can get the record changed so that future people dealing with that rule will know they don't have to comply with an invalid rule. That's why it was done in this case, because that statute had changed.
I was really focusing on the first request in your prayer for relief, and that is to invalidate 128. I understood in response to Justice Prosser's question, you suggested that really wasn't your priority.
But
things change.
It was.
Litigation unfolds.
Our concern is for the viability and future utility of 227.115. 227.40, parent 4A, says that you can bring a declaratory judgment challenging the validity of a rule, and there's three bases. One, that the rule is unconstitutional. That doesn't apply here. Two, that the agency exceeded its rulemaking authority in adopting the rule. That doesn't apply here. They were told to adopt this rule. But three, that they did not comply with rulemaking procedure.
Well, that, I'm sorry, Jim.
And the only way you can ask the court to act is to declare the rule invalid pursuant to 227.40. That's what we're entitled to ask for. That's what we did ask for. If this court rules that agencies have to comply with 227.115, and if it does what we've asked it to do, which is to tell agencies how they go about making that decision, then we will have protected the viability of 227.115, because the decision in this case will be a signal to all other agencies that in the future, when they promulgate a rule, they have to dot this I, they have to check this box.
Well, it seems to me that what, based on your responses to questions that I've asked Justice Prosser, Justice Bradley, that your clients aren't so much seeking the declaration of invalidity of the rule itself so that it should be taken out of the statute books. It seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're arguing that all of the respective agencies did not follow the rule, and so as applied to this particular instance, because the rule was not followed, the act was improper. And you're asking us, it almost seems to me, to send it back to ask them to do the report.
Not in this case. What we're asking the court to rule is that the rule is invalid. If the court determines that PSC 128 is invalid for failure to comply with the rulemaking procedure, the Public Service Commission can go back to the legislature shortly thereafter with the same rule and request a housing impact report if they choose to do so.
Council,
and that report will accompany the rule when it goes to the legislature. That box will be checked, and if the legislature still wants the rule, they can have it.
This is a motion for summary judgment, and the trial court determined there were no genuine issues of material fact with respect to the need to prepare the report. Why aren't you requesting that we send it back to the circuit court for a fact-finding hearing on that? I hear you saying that there are genuine issues of material fact.
We argued before the trial court, as we have argued at every court, that this rule as a matter of law affects housing. It's about housing. It's on the face of the law. It's not a finding of fact. It's a conclusion of law that this rule affects housing.
Well, that was the genesis of a lot of my questions to opposing counsel, because when I read your briefs, I thought they were both excellent. But to me, you were like two ships passing in the night. Because your argument, as I understood it, was that, of course, this rule affects housing. It talks about setbacks. It talks about decibel levels. Of course, it directly affects housing. That's what we're doing. So I asked opposing counsel, does this directly affect housing? Because she didn't address in her brief, but it was what was bothering me. I thought anytime you enact a rule like this and you've got all these things that apply to housing, well, you must be doing them for a reason. She said, oh, no. All it says is this is the maximum you can do. If municipalities, you want to do zero, you go right ahead. Our rule isn't based on the fact that it affects housing at all. It's just based on the fact the legislature told us to set up something, so we set up something. So, I mean, that was her answer to my question, because as I understand your brief, you don't have to show that the rule negatively impacts on housing. That's not your burden. What you have to show is that the rule directly or substantially affects housing. So it seemed to me what you said is, well, of course it does. Look at this. You're reining in what can be done with shadow effects, reining what can be done with decibels, reining in what can be done with setbacks. Of course all of those things affect housing. Otherwise, why would you be doing a rule? At least that's what I understood. She says, no, that's not why we did the rule at all. So I still have to think about it some more.
That's our contention, Justice Hogan-Sack. Yeah, my time has been up
can
for some
be,
time now.
Can it be a mixed question of fact and law, just to follow up on Justice Eagler's question? Can it be a mixed question?
I think every lawyer in the country will say yes, but what does that mean? Yes, it could be a mixed question of fact and law, but our contention is, as a matter of law, this rule affects housing. We asked the court for summary judgment saying, as a matter of law, it affects housing, and therefore the rule should be invalid.
Counsel, I have a question.
Yes.
And that is, just so I understand your responses to the variety of questions here, this rule was in limbo for 3 years. That is, it wasn't final for 3 years. If I understood, your clients had the opportunity to go to the legislature and say, stop this rule, right? And the question, right. And I think you were asked the question, did they?
Yes.
Okay. And so you were not successful in getting the legislature to stop the rule, right?
Yes. Okay. What they wanted was different setbacks.
Okay.
On a substantive basis.
All right. But you had an opportunity to go and say no report was filed. That violates the rule. Therefore, it's bad. And in 3 years, you were not successful, whether you use that or not, with the legislature. And then you're in court. I just wanted to clarify that you did have the opportunity and did take the opportunity. And, of course, that's perfectly all right. To go to the legislature and lobby the legislature. That's what the legislature's there for, to hear from the people, all the people, right? Okay. And then make a decision. And 227.20, as I read it, says there's a presumption of the following, that all the rulemaking procedures required by the chapter were complied with. And the rulemaking procedure is a report, right?
It's a presumption, Justice Abrahamson. It's
rebuttable. It's
rebuttable.
Okay, fine. Thank you. I'm sorry. Was there any other question, Justice Press?
Mr. Kastner, do you know how many other 227.115 reports have been prepared since the 95-96 session of the legislature?
We contacted Department of Commerce when there was one, and they indicated that they had never prepared one.
Anything. What about economic impact?
I know it was about housing impact.
Okay. Sorry.
As far as we know.
And has DOA ever prepared one?
I have not asked them recently. I believe I checked with them after when they first became involved, but obviously at that point in time they couldn't have prepared one, because they had just been created, and I have not asked since. But I'm not aware that any housing impact report has ever been prepared for any rule. That would include building codes.
Okay. Any other questions? I want to, on behalf of the court, thank both counsel for their extended comments at the court's request and tolerating all these questions, which they have to do. And that ends our hearing on 2013 AP 1407, Wisconsin Realtor Association et al. Versus the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin. The court is concluding its oral argument schedule and is adjourned for oral arguments. It is 10 of 1. Can the court return at 1:30?
About 2 o'clock.
And we've gotten a request for 2 o'clock. So 2 o'clock it is. We will be in closed session at 2 o'clock. The students may remain. Are they staying? Yes. May remain, and Justice Ruger will be out momentarily to talk with you all.